life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
So nice
you
to
know
be
what?
Here.
I've been trying to get you to come to this show for God knows how long. But you know, it's never too late, because what I wanted, what I was after you is... As a fellow professional that works with young and old, and also one that has been a teacher before, I thought, you know, with everything that's going on in Florida right now, I mean, probably in the world, and especially here in the United States, where parents are at their wit's ends, they don't know what to do. It's scary to get into the schools. I know you were a teacher before. I just needed more people that I can talk to so that we can find a way to hopefully, you know, bring peace, calmness in the homes and in the schools. So today, we're going to be talking about parenting teenagers, and in that segue, we're going to be touching on, you know, also how and, you know, if you were in the schools, what would happen. So before we start, let me just share with you something that happened this week. I saw a video, you know, the app, the WhatsApp, the app that they call WhatsApp. Do you know that one, Delta Love Black? Okay, so I found a video. On WhatsApp,
yes,
a father posted a video, because everybody knows that I work with teenagers and parents. So they sent me a video, and the video said, every parent, what we need is parent involvement rather than this fight on, you know, the gun laws. We need parent involvement. And it was a father who was driving in his car with probably a boy who was probably 8-9 years old, who was on the road with his backpack running to school, and the father driving on the side of the road, and the kid was on the side. And he said, here's what happens. When I try to wake up my son and say, listen, you got to wake up and get ready, the bus will leave you, and the bus leaves you. And then I'm getting all these calls from the teachers in the schools, and they're saying, you know, he's getting to school and he's being disruptive and he's not listening. So I have to now get to the next level. You are going to run to school. So this little boy was running to school, and it was drizzling a little bit in the video, but the father was, you know, literally saying, well, this is my involvement. I'm not going to put him in the car and drive him there so that he can just think that he can wake up at his own time and go to school. Given that scenario, as a father yourself, as a professional, as a former teacher, what do you think?
Well, Bob Marley has a saying that every man has the right to decide on his own destiny. I say that to say this, that every parent, I think, is in the best position to determine what best approach they can use to raise their kids. That aside, parental involvement is important. Parental involvement is critical. But we have to determine what type of involvement it will enable us to get through to the kids. Because what we want is some sort of connection, us with our children and our children with us. And I think the best way we can do that is to have consistent conversation. We need to talk with each other. I remember back in the day, conversation was one of the things that each family did and did well. Yes, we have a lot of distractions today. However, we should not allow technology to steer us away. And somebody has to take the lead. Somebody has to take responsibility. Not when the kid is 13, but when the kid is one, or even before that. We have to start nurturing the kind of environment in which we feel will help us and the kid develop in a positive way. Because the attitudes that the kids display today did not start overnight. It was a long time coming. And we allow them to get away with stuff when they were younger, because we say, oh, leave the child, it's just a child. We did not realize that everything we allow them to get away with is the same things they felt that they would always be able to get away with. Yes, involvement is concerned, but it's a two-way street. We have to talk with the kids, but we also have to listen to the kids and encourage our kids to talk with us, not on any particular subject, but on all subjects. So that parenting you described in about the video, he did what he felt what would teach his son a lesson. Now, only time will tell as to how effective a lesson that was. But I don't think I'm at liberty to criticize the approach that the father has taken. Yes, he may be right. If every day the son misses the bus, he would have to drive his son to school. It would become too comfortable for the son. And therefore, it might become a habit. Oh, I'm going to miss the bus because my dad's going to take me to school. So what we have to see now is find ways whereby your father can share with us how things are going. The son runs to school 3 days a week. Then the son might enjoy it and might continue to miss the bus, or the son might wake up early. So it's something we have to wait and see. Something we have to wait and hear more about. But I think every parent has the right, so to speak, to raise his or her child in the way that they feel is best, without abuse. That's the key. Without abuse.
Thank you for that answer. And it's interesting because my response was similar. I'll read to you what one of the followers on Facebook said. I read the story. She says, I read the story of this father. This isn't parenting, it's cruelty. This is not going to be good for this little boy because he's going to grow up, you know, angry and heartless. So it's all nonsense that this father could think that, you know, tough love is good for young men at his age, is what this lady said. So I think, just like you said, right, it's going to be up to every parent, because there's no one way of parenting that is universal, that is going to fit for every child. So my concern is, for the classroom, because I was in the classroom, I taught for a year as well, and I know you taught for years, as far as discipline is concerned in the classrooms, how do you work with each parent if we don't have, also a universal way of, expectations that are expected of children? If when it comes to classroom discipline.
Well, we can have and we should have expectations, and those expectations should be laid out for our students. But it's also true that our students should have expectations, what they expect from us. And we as teachers have to understand that each one of our students come from a different home. And we have to find ways to build relationship with them. Is it going to be easy? No, it's not going to be easy, because each teacher has about 125, 130, maybe sometimes even more students. But getting to know your students the best way you possibly can, I still believe, is the best way to get through to them. Obviously, you will connect more easily with some than you would with others. The challenge that teachers have is actually getting to know the parents. So the parents must realize that is a symbiotic relationship that has to be built between themselves and the teachers, because in essence, the teachers and the parents are raising the children, and the parent has to let the school be the school and let the school function in the ways that the school administrators feel is the best to help the students grow and develop. Yes, if there are things that take place in the school that the parents dislike, yes, there's a procedure, a process that the parents should follow to lodge the complaints. Mm-hmm. But the parents must be involved. For example, on conference nights, you have the teachers with the exceptional student having almost close to the majority of their parents showing up. Now, the teachers in the regular classes with kids who need their parents and need the support of the teachers, you'd have two, three parents coming in. Yes, parents can say they work in, but all parents, for the most part, one or both of them work. It's a question of making that commitment. By extension, I also feel the business community should encourage their parents to be there for their kids and provide the parents with the kind of flexible schedule that will make it easier for the parent to attend school functions, not to the demise of the business. But if we all see it as the community raising the child, it will be easier for the parents to put himself or herself in a position to be available, because he or she knows that if my supervisor knows I have a parent-teacher conference, I will get the necessary time to do that. If they know I have an open house, I will get the necessary time to do that. If they know I have a conference, they'll work with me so that I'll be available. So it's hard sometimes for the parents to be there as often as the parents needs to be, because the parents have to work. If the supervisors of the various business establishments realize that if they make a contribution, if they make an effort to meet the parents halfway, then they'll also be making a contribution to the growth and development of the kids who might one day be their employees.
It's something that I have thought about and probably advocated for when I was still working as an employee. Because a lot of parents I know, in the Boston area where I used to be, they worked in the nursing homes and in hospitals as nursing assistants, nurses, and, caregivers, programs. And it was so hard for them to get even time off when a child is having problems at school to come into the school and to get time off, from the school. What do you think is probably one of the biggest problems that, our schools here in the United States, because you and I are not from here. So the differences that you've seen being in the schools that is different from, Dominica, where you're from, by the way.
Well, I think we have to take into consideration, too, that we live in different times. We're living in different times, and the challenges that parents have today may be different from what they have yesterday. The mindset of the employers today may be different from the employers yesterday. So we have to take a number of variables into consideration. But outside of that, I think the school system, if possible, needs to find ways whereby, instead of always having the parents come to them, can they go through a process whereby they have community-oriented meetings where they go to the community instead of having the community come to them? So it'll be a give and take. Sometimes they find a facility within the community and to meet if that's feasible. Now, a number of things must be worked out before. Can they sometimes have web conferences? Can they sometimes have, instead of the parents, come to the school for 1, 2, 3, 2 hours for a conference? Can they have staggered conferences via the World Wide Web? Can they have teleconferences to make it easier for the parents? But a lot of T's must be crossed for that to happen. But it's something that the age that we live in is more technologically oriented. Yes, there are still a tremendous amount of households without any pieces of any technology. But can we find a way, think as deeply as we possibly can, to make it easier for the parents to be there for the kids without the parents having to physically be there because of all the other factors that come into that we have to take into consideration? Can we find ways to use technology to allow the parents to have a more direct impact, involvement with their kids? Maybe that is something that we can consider. But as far as the differences is concerned between here and back home in Dominica, I'm not sure. I think Dominica may be just like the United States right now because of the changing times. So because we still do the things we used to do. We still educate our kids the same way that we have always done, but we have changing times. So the school system is slow to catching up with the rest of society as far as delivering the information that it is supposed to be.
That is a great point. I wish that there's some politician, somebody who would hear this and implement this in the school policies, because I think that's a great idea, to have all these innovations and parent involvement that can allow parents to be involved without being present, because that's the problem, one of the biggest problems that they have. So
another thing that we can do too, The churches, the community churches need to get involved. And the community churches and the schools could somehow collaborate. So on Sundays, when you have a majority of the parents, I think go to church. The school, some school from time to time could be present and deliver some information that they would not be able otherwise to reach the parents with. We have to use what we have to get what we want. We just have to find ways. We have the resources, but we're not using the resources in the ways that will enable us to get the maximum return from the resources.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Dr. Lowe Black, because I'm still shopping for churches in my area, you know, here in the Lake Mary, Florida area, right? And I was looking to see what groups and, you know, that they have on there. It's interesting that you say that. I have seen couples groups, and they have youth groups, and they have women groups, but there's no parent group. Which would be helpful, because that's a captive audience right there that they could have. And then in those parent groups, whatever, you know, parent leads that can now invite professionals, teachers, and different people that can help inform these parents.
Well, one thing we have to be mindful of, though, parents are generally sensitive to other people telling them or attempting to tell them how to raise their kids. We have to make sure that the information that we disseminate with the parents is not directives. We're not giving them directives. This is how you do it. This is how you do it. So we're giving them as wide an array of choices. These are some of the things that can work. These are some of the things that you might want to consider. We're not telling you how to, but we're sharing with you information that if you implement it in your way, if you implement it in your way, because we're all different, maybe the results that we're getting from the kids that we have would be different. Because you all know it's an old saying, it's a cliche, that if you keep doing the same things in the same way over and over, you get the same results. So we have to change. Not everything. Maybe all we need to change is just one thing.
Yeah, so, you know, I hear you. And that's what I'm saying, you know, also is, you know, having to have more information, implement, you know, informed parenting, because then with the changing of times, and if you're a parent that's, you know, you have your baby and then you send the baby to school when it's time to go to school and then you're continuing to go to work, there's a whole lot of things that are out there that are affecting, you know, the same parent, the same child that is coming back to you, and you're still implementing same, you know, parenting skills that you knew from your mama's mama old in the days, and yet because you don't know what else is happening. So my thing is, I'm thinking if they have, you know, those groups where parents can easily access, but then they have people that come in, inform them this is what's going on and this is what, you know, what you might need to know, so that when they're sitting there and the kid says, "You don't know anything," they understand that, you don't think I do. Actually, we had somebody that came the other day and talked to us about A, B, C, D, and the kid would, you know, open their eyes and go, "Oh, I didn't think you knew about that." But it's helpful for parents to be informed, I think. They need to have that information.
No, Dr. Malatini. No, Dr. Malatini, in an ideal world, you would think that the parents of children are parents because they have the best interest of the children at heart. But not all parents have kids for the right reason.
Yeah.
And 9 out of 10 times, they are the ones who really need the information, but they despise the information because the reason for which they had the kids are very not the same reason that,
you know,
your
what?
Parents
on that
may have
note,
had you.
Let's pick on that. Yes, you're very right. Let me take a quick break, Dr. Lowe Black, and then we'll, you know, start in a little bit to go into the next segment. And I want to segue into that. Not all parents have, you know, the kids for the same reasons. And because of that background, you know, that might impact the way that they raise the children. I really like that. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. there haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
In the first half, you brought up a really good point when we were ending the first half, Dr. LeBlanc, because you know what? That is one of that missing link that a lot of people don't understand when we start looking at kids in general, or, you know, per se, the teenagers, you know, in the school system, or the children in the school system, that we miss to look at, you know, their parenting, where they are coming from. So, you know, let's take a deep at that and, you know, a deeper look at, you know, what you just said about the parents not having probably the right reasons of having had those children and their involvement not being fully there. That's what you meant, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay. What do you, you know, I mean, did you see this is the thing, right? When they come for counseling, at least for us therapists, I have an opportunity to talk to these children about, tell me a little bit about your family and your children and the dynamics. Then I realize that dad is not in the house or mom is not in the house, and they're being raised by either grandparents or an auntie or mom without a father there. And the dynamics of the adults, the way that the adults handle the raising of this children, it's almost to the point where some of, you know, the stories I hear are appalling, and I don't know how we would expect, you know, these young people to thrive in that environment, given the, you know, environments that they're coming from. As much as I know that adults will say, I don't want to hear any, you know, instructions of how I should raise my child and what I'm doing, but some of the stuff that they're doing or saying in those homes are what's impacting and affecting the children that they're raising.
Well, I think the welfare system we have in this country encourages people to have kids. So it's not something that we can address overnight, but there needs to be, I think, some system put in place where there is greater accountability. If we're going to be providing you with a means of income to help raise your kid, we have to hold you accountable for doing certain things. And we have to put the mechanics in place to ensure that you are held accountable. Unfortunately, that is where one of the areas that we are failing, the accountability. If we're providing you with all the resources we feel that you need to raise this child, and without doing a fair enough job, you have another child and another child. Somebody needs to say something. Somebody needs to address somebody. It's just a question of accountability. We have a lot of young girls having kids. They're fresh out of high school. And you can say the only diploma they have is a baby. And they don't have a clue how to raise a child. But they are also reluctant to open themselves up to receive the kind of services that would help them become better parents, because that son or that daughter is going to grow up one day. And we as a society need to do everything we possibly can to ensure that the taxpayers' dollars and cents are used in such a way that the society that first produced the tax benefits will benefit later on.
In fact, as you say that, I thought about it, you know, that around this time, which is text time, you know, those parents that have the children, this is the best time of the year for them, because then they get all those big checks and think, you know, if I have another child and 2-3 children, then I'll be getting, you know, $15,000 at the beginning of the year. And that is one reason why they would have more and more children. But then who suffers are these children? Because then the intention is not to raise responsible young adults, it's to, you know, have more money.
No, unfortunately, it's not the children. The children are not the only one who suffers. The teachers suffer. The coaches suffer. The librarians suffer. Everybody who comes into contact with those kids who are not receiving the kind of attention that they need from home suffers in some way. We all suffer because the attitudes that we'll get from those kids is atrocious. And it leads to frustration, it leads to stress. It sometimes leads to depression. Because here you are doing the best job you feel possible. Johnny is getting it. Johnny is excelling. But Sally is not. Because Sally's attitude is sorry. And when you dig a little deeper, you understand why Sally has the attitude that Sally has. So it's a systemic problem. It's not an isolated one. It's a systemic challenge. And until such time that those who are hurt the most, who are hurting the most, rise up, it will continue to be that way. But it's not something that's going to go away anytime soon.
You raise another good point as well, you know, Dr. Loblake, about the teachers. Because then here's the thing. There are teachers that are still in the schools out there. The younger ones that are growing now, they've seen, you know, I mean, a whole different way of how the parents are and how the children are. But, you know, my heart goes out to those teachers that are old school teachers, you know, that have been teaching for 20, 30 years. And they still want to, you know, I mean, they still have this expectation that I have a classroom of students that are coming in to learn so they can become somebody. You know, tomorrow, and like I said, you know, a responsible young professional or young adult, and they see that, you know, they're just coming to school just because, you know, mom wants me to go to school, or it's the thing to do. I'm supposed to be in school, but my whole goal is not for me to listen to you and get a good grade. I just want to get here, stay here, not get in trouble, meet with my friends, have fun. And that is killing a lot of teachers, because then they just don't understand why a kid would have such a mentality. And like you said, not only is it a systemic problem, but I also think that, you know, it's also, you know, their background of where they're coming from. And, you know, if they don't have that support or example of somebody that has gained something by going to school and becoming something, they don't have anybody to model after, to look after, to see why this is important. Again, having a reason, a why I'm coming to school might help a lot of kids to know why they're going to school, but there's no reason why they're going to school that they see that helpful for most of them.
So probably we need an alternative. If we have students who are perpetually disruptive, then we should have a place where they go, not by choice, but that place that they go in will be not as comfortable, if you can use those words to describe public school, as a public school. So John knows it. John continues to be disruptive in school, that the next time John is caught disruptive, this is where John's going to go. So, John, you have a choice now. You're going to go. You come into school by choice. But that place that you go in is not by choice. And that place, yes, you will do participate in meaningful activity, but the meaningful activity will be back-breaking. Because school is free. And if you're not valuing it, then we're going to find a way to have you contribute to others. But it's not going to be as comfortable, if you can use comfortable to describe public schools. But we have zero alternative. We give the kids 5-day suspension, 3-day suspension, 10-day suspension, but they have no supervision at home. And we are shocked when they come back to school worse than they left. that's something wrong with that system. Something that's not right there. If we give them suspension, yes, we're helping the teachers, because the teachers are saying, hallelujah, I don't have to deal with John for the next 5 days. what the teacher fails to understand, the next 5 days going to be worse when John comes back. He's going to be worse. And John is going to do stuff on purpose so he can get suspended again. Because it's better to be suspended than be at home, sitting down watching TV, having a blast, than come to school and having to try to do X plus Y equals something, to think, to sit down, to raise my hand. No, John don't. John hates that. So something is wrong with the discipline, if we call it that, approach to raising kids in schools.
Yeah.
It's not working.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, even if the school and the teachers, if you want to discipline those children, you have to go through the parents. And most of the parents are like, no, nobody disciplines my child with, you know, without my permission. So then they have the backup. I literally had students that I was counseling when I was still in Massachusetts that would fight, and the parents would come in and stand at the door waiting for the other students to say, you were threatening my daughter, so you fight with me. And I'm going, huh?
So if possible, we should find a way, if possible. I know the democratic system of government we have might make it difficult for them.
Yeah.
The first time, we discipline your child. The second time, you're responsible. We're not disciplining the child. It is you that's the problem. So we're going to find some ways. Instead of sending that kid to home for 5 days, you're going to lose 5 days on the job. You're going to come to school and sit down with that child. We had a fun, but as long as we continue to get away with what we're doing, we will continue to do what we're doing. Because there are no consequences. And that's as harsh as that may sound. But if you have zero consequences, people will continue doing what they're doing. In fact, even sometimes you have consequences. People just don't care.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. How long ago were you in the classroom, by the way? Has it been like 3 years now since you left the school?
No, it's been longer than that. It's 8 years. 8 years ago. 2009, and it was a breath of fresh air, not been in the classroom because of a constant fight. But I'm still in the classroom. My wife is a school teacher. I'm still in the classroom because I hear the stories. I hear the stories every day.
That's true. That's true. I'm wondering, you know, having spoken to her, how these shootings that recently happened here in the Florida area, how those have impacted the school and the students that are coming in. Are there any changes that she said have been done?
I laugh because it's not going to happen to us. Sometimes we are oblivious to everything around.
Yeah.
So therefore, imagine after Columbine, we still continue to build schools the same way we always build them. Open, wash your foot and come. Anybody can just walk through. So we did not learn from Columbine. We build the schools the same way, same minimal security, same way. And then we are shocked that all those things have happened. Now, since Columbine, we have exposed our kids to more avenues where they can learn how to be quote unquote violent. It's on television. We have oceans of video games, Slack. We have absent parenting. That has increased. So kids are now more predisposed to violence than any other time in our history. But we continue to chuck along, going doing things the same way and expecting the same results. No. And even now, I mean, we're excited now. Because it is fresh, and the students are taking matters in their own hands, that's when you might find change. The students are taking matters in their own hands. So hopefully, over time, we will feel more secured. But I'm not sure arming teachers is the right way to go. It's something different, but I'm not sure it's the right way to go.
I don't think so, because then, you know, it's like having, I mean, they will have to go through the police training and all this, you know, training, but you know, to protect themselves as well, because then these kids, when they get mad, knowing that there's a gun in the classroom, come on now.
But the kids will know who have the guns, but at the same time, you have crazy teachers too now. Yeah, you have crazy teachers too, and they might be able to pass all the background checks. You might have crazy teachers too. You may have a teacher with a 6'5" senior approaching him, and who is armed, and might just get scared, feel that he has a gun. It's crazy. But you have to do something. Doing nothing is not good enough. You have to do something. So if the powers that be feels that to arm the teachers is an approach that they can take to for the schools to feel safer, that's something different. But they must also understand that the students themselves would not know who is armed. And sometimes having ammunition is one thing. Being able to access it and use it when necessary is a different issue altogether.
Yeah, I was watching, I think it was right after the shooting, there was another school that, I mean, the security that they placed at that school, if it was to be placed in every school, but then of course it comes down to, oh, that's a $150,000, you know, security. Well, the lives of these children and these teachers are priceless. So why are we putting a price on security and making that a priority to say because of the pricing we cannot put security, you know, that expensive in every school?
Now we have to understand that those who enact legislation do not have kids in public school. The legislators, who are all millionaires for the most part, their kids go to private schools. There's a disconnect somewhere. Their kids go to private schools, and until such time that their kids are involved directly in something as heinous as that, they will continue to treat the public school system in the very same way that they're doing it, because it does not impact them directly. And if you follow the history of not just this country, but any country, when issues do not directly impact those who enact legislation, their attitude and approach towards enacting legislation to increase the protection and reduce incidents of violence, for example, is not as it would have been if they were directly impacted.
It's really mind-boggling when you really think of the school systems, because right now we're facing where parents, you never had to worry about not seeing your kid coming back from school and going to the morgue and having to bury your child after they left and went to school. You know, it was a safe zone for them to go to. But now, today, it's not even a moment where a parent can be so comfortable, so relaxed to say, I send my child to school, because then you never know what could happen there. But let's continue in this last segment and probably talk about safety and also the drug use and how that could be impacting, you know, these kids that are coming back and, you know, killing without remorse in the schools. I'm talking to Dr. John Law Black, who lives right here in the Tampa, Florida area. And, you know, he is a former school teacher that is now, you know, in his own business. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. In the last segment, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life. On AmericaOutloud.com, Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, so mental health, in the last segment before, you know, we left, I spoke about a little bit about mental health, Dr. Law Black. Here's the thing, right? And I know you've also heard in the news about the rise of, you know, the epidemic that we have of drug use or opioid use, you know, in the schools, in the communities itself, and the overdose, the high overdose that we're having. I can tell you that just in this last year, probably in the last 6 months, I've had of in this small area of probably 68 kids that overdosed. And it's not in the news, it doesn't come out in the news, but then when the kids come in for their counseling sessions and talk about, oh, we had a kid in the school who was my friend that overdosed. Oh, we had this, you know, neighbor that overdosed. And I'm going, I never saw it in the news. Do you know we have more, you know, children and adults that are overdosing on substance abuse, you know, probably more than ever that people don't know about because it's not said in the news.
Access. The question is access, easy access. It's easier now more than ever before to find the drugs that that you've heard about, that you've been told about, and peer pressure is very serious. Peer pressure is very real. And again, once upon a time, it took a community to raise a kid or a village to raise a kid. Now, parents do not want anybody to say anything to them about the kids. And sometimes right at home, the kids grow up seeing drug use right in front of them. So, and so they walk away feeling that that's cool. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. Before, parents who used to do their stuff more often than not would do it away in the absence of their kids. No, it's not a deal. They invite their kids sometimes to do it. So the thing is, how can we as a society, as a community, approach that without, so to speak, stepping on the toes of the users or the sellers, the distributors? That's where we need to focus our attention on the source. If we cut out the source, we have a better chance of reducing incidence of overdose. But if we focus on the child, for example, and not on who provides the child with the drugs that the child uses, then the child might be for a little time not be enticed to use drugs, but then the child still has access to the drugs. So that's where I think our focus needs to start, on the source of the drugs.
And it's being sold in the schools, you know, that's another thing. They're recruiting these young people to be selling right there in the school. And, you know, I don't know if that's one thing that, you know, the school system, the adults, the professionals are looking at to say that it's right here in the school and they are selling it in the school. Well, the shooting that happened in Florida, right? My understanding that young man, you know, actually had a mental illness that shot in there, which we hear a lot about these young men that are shooting up in the schools and killing people. And I also think, you know, I don't know what you think about people being well informed and educated about, you know, how to identify if a child is struggling with mental illness, and also to tell, because then once they do the shooting, you start to hear all these neighbors that are coming out and you hear friends that are coming out and talking about things that were quote unquote weird about this person, that something wasn't adding up. And now we hear about it after the fact, which is not helpful at all. What do you think about the awareness of making people aware and making it a free, you know, probably making the opportunities, you know, for people to talk about mental illness as open as possible so that people, you know, get to intervene before we lose lives?
Well, people are also scared about their own lives. They're afraid that if they say anything that person might find out, they were the ones who said X, Y, and Z, and then they might get hurt in the process. But it's interesting that you mentioned mental health, and I've been hearing that quite a bit. But unfortunately, the legislators, instead of saying, you know, we need to have at least one mental health counselor in each school.
Yep.
What we did is we want to arm the teachers instead. But if we say that mental health is one of the challenges, one of the issues that leads to mass shooting, and we want to do everything we possibly can to address it in the beginning, then why don't we have mental health counselors in the school who do mental health counseling, not testing, but actually do counseling to not only cure, for want of a better word, those who are already ill, but probably to provide those who are not there with the kind of information so that when they get there, if they get in there, they will seek the attention that they need before it escalates. Wouldn't that have been a wonderful thing to create an opportunity for have at least one mental health, at least one mental health counselor in each public school, each one, creating jobs we're talking about, in each one. But what we have done, we have minimized mental health. But when something happens, as an escape, we run and say mental health. But what did we do as a society?
Yeah. And it's also because, you know how early on we were talking about the background of the families, where they're coming from, and the stress that is caused in those home environments. These kids need somewhere where they can vent about it, where they can learn coping skills, where they can be feel support. Because then not every home feels like a home and feels like they are being supported and parented. But then they might seek that elsewhere where they can have someone who's supportive, who can educate them, you know, who can listen to them, who can talk to them about ways to survive, just pure survival skills, even surviving in your own family. That's something that's needed, that these kids need to learn. How do I even survive my own parents? Because when they start fighting, when they're drunk, when, you know, they're angry at each other, when they're angry at me, it's almost like they want to put me right back in their stomach and say, I never wanted to have you anyway, so I'll put you right back in my stomach so you can go back to wherever you came from. And that's how literally it feels, like you're the worst enemy that ever happened to them and you came in to disrupt the family. So with those emotions, they need, I agree with you, an additional person or persons that can be in that school and support them. And every day, most, you know, when I was in the school and I had set up my private practice in the school, there were kids that literally came into the school and said, if it wasn't that you were here, I wouldn't have come to school, but I wanted to see you today. I knew that I have an appointment with you, so I came in. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I can imagine. And there are kids today who need that kind of support. But unfortunately, the counselors that we have in schools do not focus on mental health counseling. They focus on how what they can do to help the students pass the test. Unfortunately, the kids need that kind of attention. They do. But we know their parents can't afford it. So the school would probably be a good avenue whereby they can get someone to give them the kind of guidance that they need from a mental health perspective.
Yeah, that's a big one, because then guess what? There are many of us that are in private practice that, you know, we work on our own, that if the government had to also give out grant money and say, look, I'm going to give you $200,000 and set you up in two schools or in a school where you can see, you know, 40, 50 kids a week and get this flat, you know, money, so that you don't have to deal with the hula hoops of insurances and hula hoops of parents not having money. Just be there to help the children and their families. Many of us will pick up and set up in the schools and be there, be available, and, you know, provide the much needed mental health counseling for those children as well. I mandated the parents that if I see your kid, then once a month, I need to have a family session. That session will be, you know, scheduled as a family session. So if we have to do it early in the morning, if I have to write you a note to give to your, you know, employer so that you can come in, but we need to have that. It was very, very helpful. And I did that for 10 years, as you know, very helpful to have, you know, a mental health counselor based in the school, and the teachers knew that I was there. I ended up having to do sessions for teachers more than I did for the kids sometimes, because they were very stressed and, you know, needed also an outlet where they could, you know, vent about their own stresses and frustrations about the system, as well as, you know, in their classrooms.
Absolutely. I think that would help. That would help a great deal. And it's needed, and you're right. All the stakeholders in the school system need some sort of relief. Because the teachers are stretched. The teachers are, what's happening in our school system is enough to stress teachers out. It's enough to stress teachers out. Everybody is stressed, but no one has the relief that they need. And having a mental health, at least one mental health counselor would be ideal, I think. A good start, a good place to start. And over time, Over time, when we evaluated, we could make a determination as to which schools need more than one. We need that. And we need to stop making mental health seem like a taboo and something that to be, we should run away from, because no one wants anyone to know that they're going through stuff. We have to find a way to let people understand that we all go through stuff. And the sooner we get help with the stuff that we're going through, is the easier it will be for us to manage the stuff that we're going through.
Which is interesting, and I'll be doing a show on that, you know, to talk about mental health, because what happens is when you hear mental health, you know, everybody says, well, crazy, mental health. And then I ask a simple question. Do you ever feel stressed out sometimes and feel like, you know, that you're so overwhelmed and exhausted? Oh, my God, all the time. I'm always stressed out. I'm always frustrated, and this and that happened. I said, whoa, stop. Because that is mental health. Stress is part of mental health. When you know, something that is, you know, affecting your mental, you know, capability and mental health. So when we say, I don't deal with mental health, I don't see a mental health counselor, and I don't like anything to do with mental illness because I'm not mentally, you know, unstable. Well, it's not about that. It's about you finding ways to cope with your day-to-day, you know, happenings, whether it's school, work, and even parenting when it comes to this, or the teacher for teaching, so that you're not, you know, stressed out to the point where, like you mentioned earlier on, you're sick yourself, you're getting into the hospitals, and, you know, you can help yourselves, because these kids can see that. And I had one teacher at one school that, you know, was alcoholic because she couldn't handle it, so she started drinking. But then when she comes in the morning, you could smell the liquor. And the kids are the ones that ended up having to say something and said, well, how come they let her come in and teach when she's drunk every day? And I'm going, what do you mean she's drunk every day? Man, that teacher smells of beer and alcohol every day that she comes. And then she's screaming and yelling. It's like, do you drink in the morning or do you drink at night? These are kids saying that, you know? And
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and the intervention started when the kids started, you know, complaining and talking about this teacher. But again, it's because of the stress that, you know what, kept going and going. And finally, you know, I think she just started drinking more. I don't think, you know, probably the drinking started because of the teaching, but she started drinking more and more until she couldn't control herself from the drinking.
It's unfortunate that we live in a society that pays more attention to what it sees. We focus a lot on physical health, not realizing that our physical health is driven by our mental health. What we do not see is more important than what we do see. Our mind, that we say it in passing often, the mind is a terrible thing to waste. But we only address the health of the mind after the fact, while we address the health of the body before. We do every single thing we possibly can think of to look good, but we do very little to feel good. I was at a Barnes & Noble store once, and I heard one of the most profound statements in passing. One man was saying to another that we have been doing this thing wrong all our lives. We've been feeding the body to feed the mind. He said, no, we should be feeding the mind to feed the body. We need to pay more attention to our mental health, because if the mind is okay, the rest will fall in place. But if just the body is okay and the mind is not, we're in trouble.
That's very true. That's very true. You know, it's so interesting how time flies by, because this is quite a topic that we could go on and on and on and on and on. I also believe that, you know, we shared a lot of suggestions of what could, and, you know, what could happen, what could be changed at a systemic level, which, you know, is all fine and dandy. But as we know, nothing happens overnight. So, Dr. Loblak, as we end, one or two points of something that parents, teachers can do right now, in what, you know, something that is in their control, either pushing towards these changes or making changes, you know, right where they are as we end. Do you have anything to share?
It's something that I've learned a long time ago. It's as simple as it sounds. Know the name of every child in your class. Remember the face of every child in your class. And as often as you can, ask, how are you doing? As simple as that sounds, that child may never have been asked that question, or may never be asked that question for the rest of the day. Make that child feel that you are more concerned about him as a person than as a student. A person. Forget the math for a moment. Forget the English for a moment. Speak with a person. Hi, how you doing? It's so nice to see you today. And be genuine about it. Find it in you. I know it's hard. Find it in you to reach out, to connect. That's the key word. Connect with your kids on a personal level. Get to know them. Let them get to know you the best way you possibly can. And over time, it's not a project, but it's a process. Over time. Maybe not for you, but you'll be helping another teacher out. That's it.
Thank you so much. And I just want to remind all the parents, teachers out there, I have two things that I can remind you. Be involved and be in charge, because this is going to take everybody being involved in getting together and coming together with some resolutions of how we can make ourselves, you know, schools safe as well as our children safe. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Stem Show. And again, Dr. Lo Black, thank you for being a guest on the Dr. Stem Show.